Okay, I'd just like to start out by asking you to state your name and your age and where you were born,
or
where and when you were born, if you're willing to. And I'd like to say that this is for the Bridgeport Public Library's Oral History Program. And why don't you go ahead and tell us your name? And
well, I'm Edna Summons Smith, and I was born in 1913. In December, a long time ago. And I live in Bridgeport. I've lived in Bridgeport now. Well, one place I lived in, one apartment. I lived there 28 years in one apartment on the East End. And I guess I've been in Bridgeport since then, about, well, 39, I guess.
Oh, my goodness.
1939, yeah.
So you know a lot about the city.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
seen
yeah.
Seen a lot of changes.
Oh, yeah, there has been a lot of changes. Good. But it's getting bad now. Hmm. So, but I like Bridgeport. I've been in other cities and stuff, but I'm glad to come on back home. This is home.
This is home.
This is home, yeah.
Well, why don't you tell me first a little bit about what you were mentioning before, so we know somewhat of your background, where you were born, or where you were living when you were a child, and how many people were in your family.
I lived at 60 New Haven Avenue in Milford, and that's right across, well, I don't know about it now, but it was right across the street from Rosenbaum's school. That was a very exclusive rich man's college. Nobody went there unless they had money.
Mm-hmm.
It was Jewish, mostly. Of course, it was called Rosenbaum's. Now it's called Milford Prep. But you didn't go there. I know one person that was going there, because I was a kid, but I heard my parents then talk about Ben Burney. He used to be a big band leader. His son went there.
Mm.
No black went there. They only worked there.
Right.
And we were right on the highway, and the trolleys used to stop right in front of our house, and I'd see the people get off the buses, black people, get off the bus and off the trolley and walk up the hill. They were going up there to work.
Hmm.
They weren't going to school. They were chambermaids and so forth and so on. And once a year or twice a year, they'd have like Parents' Day. And that was something to see. These big limousines would come with the chauffeurs. And that's when they wore raccoon coats. They'd have the raccoon coats on and everything. And it was quite a spectacle, but that's where I was born. And I guess the house still stands there. It's a little tiny house. And our backyard ran into the chief of police backyard.
Oh.
The name was Mar. And we played together, Catherine and Doris. We didn't play too much, but he was chief of police, and his son was a captain or something in the police. And that was our neighbors. That's all the neighbors we had. So there was a store across the street, but that's it.
So the neighborhood wasn't as developed then
it
is now.
No. In fact, I went by the house here about 5 years ago and didn't even find the house. Didn't know it was there. It's so small. It was a 10-room house when I lived in it, but it looks like it's gotten smaller and smaller. And there was a factory beside it.
Oh, what was that?
A steel. Edgewood Steel. Some kind of a steel factory.
Mm-hmm.
And that was adjacent to our property. And then, of course, St. Mary's Church is on the corner. I don't think that's there anymore. It used to be a big Catholic church. St. Mary's, right there on the corner. But see, we weren't allowed out of the yard.
Hmm.
We were allowed to go across the street and up the street to school.
Right.
And they timed us. It took you a half hour from our house to school, Central School, and a half hour back. And if you weren't back within a certain length of time, you were questioned.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one day, it was in the summertime, and we were playing shadow tag. And we're going to school, running along, but somehow or other, I was late for school. When I got there at 1 o'clock, well, I must have got there about 10 minutes past 1, and they couldn't figure out where I had lost the time. I had come home and get a spanking.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, because it was to school and home.
Now, who made up the rule? Was
my
it your
mother.
Parents who timed you?
My mother.
She was pretty strict about that kind of thing.
About everything. Everything. She didn't give you an inch on anything. Even the house was cleaned from top to bottom every week.
Mm.
Even the cellar stairs were scrubbed.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, that was my job. Cellar stairs were scrubbed down. You know, the whole house was cleaned and everything.
Right.
But the stairs leading down to the cellar had to be scrubbed every Saturday, too.
So how many brothers and sisters did you have at that point?
I had, let's see, four. Two brothers and a sister. Yeah, it was four of us.
Mm-hmm. So you were there living in the house in Milford, and what did your parents do?
My father was a plasterer by trade,
mm-hmm.
and my mother was a housewife.
Mm-hmm.
But she had studied piano when she was a young girl. In fact, she gave a recital in Milford Town Hall when she was about 14 or 15, and they were so proud of that. I guess they thought she was going to be a concert pianist, but she never made it. Not with all them kids.
Hmm.
But my father was a plasterer. As I say, his father was a mason contractor, one of the first ones in Bridgeport, in Connecticut, I guess, a black man. And he got his trade with his father, from his father.
That's
what he did. Yeah.
Now, did they contract themselves out to different builders, or how did they get work?
I think he did jobs out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had Italian men working for him.
Right.
You know, it was just my father was the only black person. But he had men working for him. And as I say, he had this old horse, Daisy. And he made a good living. My grandmother did take in a little laundry for a while. But she was a cook. Mm-hmm. She was a good, very good cook. Used to be a tea room in Stafford Center called Priscilla Tea Room.
Mm-hmm.
It's still, the building is still there. You see a yellow house with little tiny yellow little windows.
Mm-hmm.
That used to be Priscilla Tea Room. Now that was the tea room where the people with means would come and mm-hmm. have lunch or dinner in Stratford. And she was the cook there for years.
Oh, I bet she was a wonderful cook. Now,
she
these
was.
Are your father's parents that you're talking
yeah,
about
those
now.
Yeah, my
with
father's
the...
parents, yeah.
Okay.
And my mother's mother... After she got, I remember her working at Columbia Records because she used to catch the trolley in front of our house. And Grandma, I think she must have been like a maid or something in Columbia Records because she worked there for years until she had a stroke.
Mm.
And both grandmothers had strokes and
so
died.
She traveled from Milford to
Bridgeport
to work at
Columbia
Records.
Yeah. All of them worked. And my grandfather, he drove a wagon for a grocery store. My maternal grandfather. That's it. What's his name? I can't think now. Platt. Platt's grocery store. I think it was Platt's. But he worked for them for years. And he was superintendent of the Sunday school and thing.
Mm-hmm.
We always had, as I say, my grandmother in Stratford always had somebody come into the house. And my grandfather in Milford, as I say, he was superintendent of the Sunday school and stuff. And he always brought somebody home Sunday for dinner. We very seldom had Sunday dinner without some minister or something at the dinner table. It was a tradition.
So you were regular churchgoers?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And which church did you go to in Milford?
Milford Baptist. First Baptist Church in Milford. And still officiate with the Stratford Baptist. Now, Stratford Baptist stands on land that my grandfather helped buy.
Oh.
He didn't go to church. But as I say, he was a contractor.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to buy this land, and there was five men. And he was one of the men that gave money for the land that the church stands on that land now.
Mm. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So that's what they remembered him by. And my grandmother was president of the missionaries for over 31 years at the Stratford Baptist Church. And they used to have strawberry festivals. My grandfather, he did go to church often, but he never refused them the use of his property or anything.
Right.
So we had big property there in Stratford. And they used to have the strawberry festivals and, you know, peach festivals and stuff. Whatever the church wanted to have, he never come downstairs to see anybody, but they were perfectly welcome on his property. And so my grandmother did what she wanted to do, and he did what he wanted to do. He stayed upstairs, and she had the house.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Uncle Elmer, he went to war. Their oldest, my father was the oldest, and they had two boys. And my Uncle Elmer, he went off to war. I can remember him coming home.
And that was which war?
World War One.
Mm-hmm.
World War One. My brother was in World War II. I lost him about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He had a beautiful voice. He sang at my brother Russell.
Mm-hmm.
He sang at Governor Baldwin's inauguration.
Oh.
Oh yeah, yeah. He was quite the singer.
A lot of musical talent in your family.
Yes, yeah. He sang. Well, he had a beautiful voice anyway, but he was in Stratford. I think he was going to school then, in Stratford High School. And of course, when Baldwin was inaugurated, at the inauguration, my brother sang. And the first time my father heard him sing, he went to a Slovak wedding, because he was all surrounded by Slovaks over there in Stratford, no black, you know. And one of the neighbors got married.
Mm-hmm.
And of course they all grew up and everything. And when this girl got married, she asked my brother to sing at her wedding. And he, So my father went to the wedding too. And that's the first time he was so proud.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I never heard him sing. And he said, he sang the Lord's Prayer. He said, that was beautiful. And that was the first and the last time. I think my father went to church, heard anybody sing.
Now, you mentioned something earlier to me before we started to tape that your mother's family
mm-hmm.
had Native American
yes.
roots.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us a little bit about that for the record?
What I know for the record, they were in Milford between Woodmont and Milford. Our mother was a black woman. And her father was a Native Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And she was about 7 years old, she told me, before she ever ate off a glass plate.
Mm.
Now I'm trying to think of the people's name that she worked for. It begins with a B. They had a ice business. What is those people's name? But anyhow, she worked for them. You know, get her meals. And a lady used to put her on a box, she told me, to stand so she could reach the sink and wash these dishes in turn in exchange for a meal.
Mm.
And she said the first time she ate off a glass plate was from these people when they let her eat there. And she used to go every day and wash the dishes and she'd eat. But my great-grandfather, he never did a day's work in his life. He didn't do anything but fish and trap. And that's what you ate, what he brought home, the skins and stuff like that. And they made it the best they could.
Mm-hmm. And then when she got older, she went to school there in that part of Connecticut?
Yeah, she went to school in Milford, yeah, and she married.
She met your father there?
She met my grandfather.
Your grandfather. Right?
Yeah, he came up from Virginia. What he was doing, he was, I guess, the slavery was over or something. He wasn't a slave, but he had come up from down south.
Mm.
And she met him, and they got married. And there was a 17-year difference in their ages. And that was always a bone of contention. Because she used to think that she was so much younger than him, you know, that she would outlive him and this thing and that. And they used to have a few words about that. And when they were having a few words, they would call each other by their first name. Now, they were really at it. He'd call her, now, Laura Rylas, And she'd say, Alexander Taylor. Now those were some bad, those were hard words. Now you know they were really mad at each other when they got through that.
Oh boy.
But that was it. We used to laugh about that. And Alexander, and he was so proud of his name. His name was Alexander Robert Bray. Oh. A-R-B, and he wanted that on everything. Our door thing at A-R-B, Alexander Robert Bray. Don't miss it. Don't miss it. But I had a good childhood. Plenty of eat, plenty of food. And she was a sweet grandmother. We used to talk about church. My mother always used to buy out of the catalogs. You know, our clothes, because she didn't go to the store or nothing. But we always had nice clothes. And Sunday, we'd go to Sunday school. And my mama would dress us up. If I wore blue hair ribbons, my sister wore pink ones. Whatever we wore, we had these hair ribbons. And we'd get dressed and everything in our clothes. And we had to come downstairs to the kitchen where my grandmother was cooking Sunday dinner and let her see us before we went to church. And she made such a big thing over us. You couldn't tell us nothing, because here was her grandchildren all dressed up ready for church, and she'd have us turn around mm-hmm. so she could look at it, and she'd make so much commotion over us, and oh, that did us a world of good.
And then, what were the schools like? You went to school there?
Central School in Milford, yeah. It was all right. I didn't have no trouble. We had, I remember one man teacher. I was sitting with my fingers like that across my face. And he said something to the teacher, and they laughed, you know. But I had no trouble in school. I had no trouble in school. I don't know. I guess it was, well, it wasn't segregated. We all went to school at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the chief of police children in the back, mm-hmm. we all went to school at the same time, so I guess we didn't have no trouble. Not that I know of.
And then you mentioned earlier that your father moved the family for a while to
Long Island. He had a building boom around 29. We went to Long Island, and we stayed there until, I was about 15 or 16 when we come back. Yeah, we came back because my grandmother, well, the Depression came. Mm-hmm. And he found that he couldn't swing it mm-hmm. like he had been doing. So he figured, well, I'll bring them back to their mother. And of course, as I say, my grandmother's door was always wide open. So when he, of course, we didn't know anything about it, he contacted her and he told her how things were with him and so forth. When we knew anything, one Sunday morning, there was a great big truck there.
Oh my goodness, that was a shock.
Mm-hmm, and they moved us bag and baggage one Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And that's how we got back to Connecticut.
And you moved back to your maternal grandmother's or
yeah,
the
one maternal. In Stratford?
Oh, okay.
Maternal grandmother, yeah. And that's where my mother died. My mother died at 35. Mm-hmm. But that's what Pop did. He brought us back. Of course, he didn't stay there. He continued to stay in Long Island and work, like he worked 3 days a week or 2 days a week or something like that. And then mm-hmm. sometimes, and of course, they didn't have no unemployment.
Right.
You know, so he couldn't feed us, couldn't pay the light bill or nothing like that, you know. So he came on back in. And I was supposed to start high school that September. We moved here. We moved here in around July and August and September, and they were making plans for me to go back to school. And my mother up and died. She died the 7th or 8th of October. And they said to me, you know, you're going to have to get yourself a job, because, you know, you're next to the oldest. And
that was a big responsibility. Mm-hmm. What did you do?
I went out and did day's work. I mean, I got a mother's helper job, mm-hmm. and I worked, and I supported myself.
Right.
I worked all my life.
So you weren't able to go back to school?
No, I wasn't able to go back to school. No. I read a lot, And I learned a lot, but I never went back to school. And after a while, you get so to the place where you figure, well, I made it this far. I went and went to work in this factory.
I worked in
domestic, and I had full responsibility. I mean, I know one woman. I worked for a family. I won't give their name. But but they were a prominent family. They didn't have as much as people thought they had, but I worked for them. And her mother-in-law one day was there. She said to her, she said, she's so efficient. She said, you better hold on to her, because she said she can do everything. And she said, I know she can. She said, well, you hold on to her. And I didn't know I heard him. That's what I did until... Then I got married.